The science behind sound in architecture has been around for centuries. The Romans constructed amphitheaters that helped the human voice project to the back rows. Maybe you have visited the Capitol, where there's a strange round room that one can whisper on one side and be heard 50 feet away on the other side. Buildings can have a focus on the acoustics, whether it be to dampen the noise or maximize certain frequencies. Welcome back to Accelerando. I'm Paula Tuttle, and today we're diving into acoustic engineering, or sound architecture. Seiji Ozawa Hall was built on the grounds of Tanglewood in 1994. After the initial break-in period, an acoustician named Lawrence Kirkengard was asked to address the top frequencies and how to improve them. So, he took an eighth of an inch off the absorptive cellulose that covered the ceiling. And the consensus is that it improved the sound. One of the measures of acoustics is the reverberation time. The old Baroque venues were very small, and the reverb measured 1.5 seconds. So reverberation time is defined as how long the sound gives the impression of lingering in the room. And this, in fact, comes from the reflective surfaces, the walls, and the ceilings. So you would say a private chapel with a very short reverb time is ideal for, say, a Bach fugue. But his choral works, like St. John's Passion, they were always performed in larger churches so that the voices would blend. The reverb made it sound much better, and the reverb time was closer to 1.7 seconds. In the time of Mozart and Haydn, the halls were probably at about 1.7 seconds, too. And the halls were built for certain sizes of audiences and the kind of reverb that made the music sound the best. Moving forward into the Romantic era, music of Brahms and Strauss, you have bigger halls holding over 1,600 seats, and the reverb moves up to 2.2 seconds. By the 20th century, the needs of the halls were dedicated to performing all forms of music from all periods, so they split the reverb down the middle, and most halls are trying to seat more people. And they usually do this by making the halls wider. And they also try to make the individual spaces, the seats, a little more accessible and comfortable. Seiji Ozawa Hall is what you call a perfect shoebox style. It's 65 feet wide, 130 feet long, and 50 feet high. And it has two galleries and a rear wall that opens up to let 2,000 concertgoers sitting on the lawn listen to the concerts. The architects were all on the same page when they decided to fall back on the classic shoebox format, like the Boston Symphony's home hall, Symphony Hall. More often, new halls aren't as responsive as the old halls. Why is that? The shape of the hall plays the biggest part. The shoebox form of Boston's Symphony Hall has been the favored shape. But when it comes to those warmer frequencies, architects point to the thick plaster applied directly to brick or stone, and it helps sustain the low bass response, unlike wood, which has a tendency to simply reflect the treble notes. Newer halls fail in both categories, departing from the shoebox formula and going cheap on the plaster. Maybe it's hubris. Architects thinking they can account for these deviations with other factors, hoping to even out the acoustics with more modern technology, while making a bold statement and creating a visual masterpiece. The architects of Ozawa learned from the old halls what worked. They put stucco over masonry that was a foot thick, and the ceiling is concrete. The result is a reverb time of about 2 seconds, perfect for Mozart or Wagner. Leo Baranek, author of the 2004 edition of Concert and Opera Halls, ranked Ozawa Hall as the fourth best American concert hall ever built after Boston Symphony Hall, Carnegie Hall, and Meyerson Symphony Center in Dallas. There are three generalizations about concert halls. First, small halls are better than large halls. Second, old halls are better than new halls. And then, halls built for a single purpose are better than multi-purpose halls. The Opera Bastille in Paris is a controversial venue, and there's some things to love and apparently a lot of things to hate, too. First off, everyone was saying, why build a new opera house when there's already the Opera Comique and the Paris Opera and the Palais Theatre? Well, obviously, that's typical of being the French. They're always having to be the best. The old opera house had slipped from first rate when it was first built in 1945 to being considered mediocre in the 90s. But the other sentiment that prevailed was that the old Palais Garnier was too elitist, and the Opera Bastille was to be built in a historic spot that had a street festival each year. So it was the people's opera. It lies in the Place de la Bastille, near the 12th arrondissement, a gritty working-class neighborhood. Opera Bastille seats 2,700, not nearly as many as the Met, and a lot bigger than La Scala. The Met seats 3,800, and La Scala just over 2,000. The sound has been described by critics as clear, but not particularly resonant, and lacking warmth. But to be fair, the project to build the hall had numerous hurdles. But what interests me, it's a process to pick Carlos Ott, a Canadian, to design the hall. It turns out he was the only architect among 756 entries to fulfill a 400-page competition program that describes the expectations of the panel. And some of the jurors thought that the author Ott, the applications were anonymous, they thought Ott was Richard Meier because Ott's retro style resembled Meier. But in the end, the French got exactly what they wanted. Not the best hall in the world, but the biggest. Despite its smaller seating capacity, the Bastille is three times the size of the Met, and technologically, the best. More than half the Bastille is backstage facilities. There's a rehearsal hall, a mobile orchestra pit, a turntable, and a mobile stage that is also an elevator, in addition to 11 ancillary scenery stages on two levels. They're joined together by motorized trolleys. All of this facilitates rapid rotation of acts and even different operas. While one is being performed, another can be rehearsed, and a third opera can be made ready on a lower level. This whole mechanism allows for a larger repertoire, varied programs, and up to 450 performances a year. Soon, the Met and La Scala would be deemed merely opera houses, and the Bastille a grand project, meaning one of the nine grand projects Paris Presidente Mitterrand would undertake to total a price of $4 billion. The Bastille was rumored to end up costing nearly $1 billion. Yikes. Witold Rybczynski writes that the building suffers aesthetically, not only stylistically. It's bland, but it seemed crammed into the neighborhood and it just seems out of place. Its only redeeming visual quality, he writes, is that at night, spotlit columns in the glass emphasize the building's transparency, making a dramatic statement. Not quite magical, but much improved over the daytime. At night, the juxtaposition between the massive opera and the modest neighborhood verges on a dialogue. He goes on to point out that the tendency of every generation to feel obliged to make these huge architectural projects to make a symbolic contribution to their generation's clearly proven folly by the Bastille Opera House. Unlike the architects in Ozawa Hall, who called upon the tried and true measures, the Bastille was trying to win. What the new hall did accomplish was an atmosphere less formal. And today people tend to dress up more for the old Palais Garnier, where it's used more for ballet than opera these days. The granite and glass Bastille Opera House tends to be a casual atmosphere. Its technology is inspiring, and it probably brings in the younger crowd too. I like to encourage my listeners to hear live music in real live music venues. It's the best thing for culture, and it's exciting to sit in a real hall. We have a bunch of really great venues in Pittsburgh that were renovated movie theaters. the Benedum, Heinz Hall, and the Byam. You find halls like these in Wheeling and Akron, too, from the same era. And of course, major orchestras around the country have really great venues. And some have summer homes, too, like the Boston Symphony's Ozawa Hall. There's the Cleveland Orchestra's Blossom Music Center. Have some fun this summer and attend an outdoor concert. It's really the best way to celebrate getting back to normal life again. And that's it for this week. If you like this episode, please share it with a friend. Or you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you do your listening. We'll see you next time.